So our first speaker today is Alexandra Sapé. And since the details of the biodata are already available in the program book, I thought I will skip reading that and use the time for your presentation. So, Alexandra.
So good afternoon, everyone. Today I'd like to speak a little bit about some research carried out by myself in the atmospheric LIDAR group at the University of Maryland, Baltimore County, in which we use Doppler wind LIDAR measurements to help to try to understand meteorological controls, so weather at a fine scale, potential impact on a turbine's ability to produce power. So we know there's an enormous potential to capture the kinetic energy of wind and produce power, but there's a lot of uncertainties and associated high costs in doing that. One of the reasons is because of the natural intermittency of wind. So wind is highly variable. Therefore, the power that we can capture is also highly variable. So I love this graphic because in one figure it shows the driver of that variability, which we know in this room is weather. So the blue text is describing the weather conditions at this specific site, and the y-axis is relative power, and the x-axis is time. So you can see within one day or a series of days, immense variability in power driven by the weather conditions. So our ability to monitor and predict this relationship is key for understanding a turbine underperforming or overperforming. And this is true pre-installation of a turbine, so before the farm is ever constructed, and also once the farm is operating. And so for my research interest, I'm focusing on understanding this relationship before a wind farm is ever constructed. So in that light, when developers start a project, they ask themselves a series of questions, which we're pretty familiar with here. How good is the wind? How much energy can I produce? How much would it cost? How should I optimally lay out my farm? And one of the key values they need is the hub height wind speed indicated by the star. Unfortunately, though, especially in an offshore environment, there are limited measurements of that hub height wind speed. So we have to do the best with what we have. And typically that's buoy data, which would be maybe 4 meter wind speed, or a Met Tower, which is very expensive, but would give you measurements a little bit higher in the marine boundary layer of wind speed and also perhaps temperature. So whatever data is available, they take and they can extrapolate it then. And most typically it's using the power law equation, which assumes a logarithmic wind profile, as shown in the blue. So this assumes relatively low wind shear in the profile and low turbulence. This is true when the atmosphere is in neutral conditions, but as we know, the atmosphere varies from unstable to stable conditions, so that means the wind profile offshore does as well. And the crosshairs are representing that change it would have then in that key hub height wind speed value. And given the relationship between power and wind speed, a small error in that wind speed would contribute to a very large error in your power, and as we heard yesterday, a very expensive error in terms of power output. So Maryland, in 2010, legislation was passed to incentivize the development of 200 megawatts of offshore wind, so the federal leased area is shown in the polygon in red. From a broad-scale perspective, this is a really interesting location, given its proximity to diverse geographic or topographic features. So we've got the Appalachian Mountains to the west. You've got the marine estuary, the Chesapeake Bay. You've got the urban cores of Baltimore City and Washington, D.C. And it's not shown in this image, but you also have coastal upwelling that happens along the Delmarva Peninsula as well as the Jersey coast. So interesting location for a wind farm. In terms of measurements, there aren't any right now offshore in that wind energy area. There are the red dots are showing buoy data points. So there is a buoy just to the northeast of the wind energy area for Maryland, but no hub height measurements. That buoy data point is at 5 meters. So UMBC was contracted by the Maryland Energy Administration to help to collect wind measurements and help characterize the wind resource in the initial stages before the developer was chosen. Last year, the developer was chosen for Maryland. U.S. Wind is the company. It's an Italian-based company, or an Italian-owned company. So the phase one of that research happened in 2013. We actually took a WindQ V2 offshore on the Scarlett Isabella research vessel, which was performing a geophysical survey for the state, and we collected about 2 months of wind data. That's what I'm going to be presenting today. But there is a phase two of this work, which is using a scanning Doppler wind LIDAR, similar to the V2, except instead of a single point wind profile, we can scan about 3 kilometers, and we can have many virtual Met towers in terms of wind speed, wind profiles. That LIDAR is in, its home base is in Ocean City, Maryland, which is on the coast. So like I said, it's scanning 3 kilometers out. It's not within the Maryland wind energy area. That's about 12 miles off the coast. So for phase one, we wanted to first understand how our LIDAR measurements compared to some of the models and the extrapolation techniques. In this, the data I'm about to present, we're assuming that the LIDAR hub height wind speed is truth. There are some caveats in that as well. So we compared our data to the nearest buoy, which is pictured here, and we used the 5-meter buoy data and we extrapolated it to hub height. And the distributions are shown on the right. I'm showing the Weibull distributions of both, and the statistics of the distributions are shown in the table at the bottom. Just looking at the distributions, though, you can see they're different. The LIDAR is much more variable in terms of its wind speeds at hub height compared to what the buoy estimated, and the buoy underestimated the hub height wind speed by about a factor of 3 meters per second. It's pretty significant. We then compared our data set, 100-meter LIDAR measurements, to models and reanalysis data set. So the plot on the left is showing the error for wind speed. From magenta to blue, the model resolution or the data set's resolution increases, so it becomes more coarse. So we expect the error to also increase, and that's what we saw, anywhere between 1.6 meters per second to 3 meters per second. On the right, I'm showing the same comparison except for wind direction error at hub height. And so we saw a pretty decent range in error for that as well, anywhere from 26 degrees to 70 degrees off there. So then we looked at the overall statistics from our campaign. So I'm showing the 100-meter PDF and overlaid with a Weibull distribution of it. And we saw a pretty high wind speed offshore for the summer. So climatologically, the summertime winds in this part of the world should be the weakest, or it are the weakest, but we saw 7.2 meters per second at hub height, so that was pretty encouraging. We then just compared that to the NREL estimate from a 2010 report that used some models from AWS, I believe, to understand Maryland's wind resource, and the annual estimate was 8.2 meters per second. So then questions were maybe more should be looked into. Maybe the wind resource annually could be higher if the summer winds are actually higher. So this is nothing conclusive yet, but just an interesting finding. So we asked ourselves, why are so many differences between the LIDAR data and these estimated approaches? And the simple answer was that it's probably due to non-standard turbine inflow conditions, meaning the logarithmic wind profile is not always true. Especially offshore in this area. So this plot is showing the diurnal variation of average wind speeds at the different height bins of the LIDAR. And the gray shading, if you can see it, is just representing overnight hours, so sunset to sunrise. It's in UTC, so -4 for the local time. And what you'll notice is that we saw a wind maximum. The highest winds, strongest winds, are happening at night versus during in the day. We also looked into the data and we saw the frequent development of what we're calling for now a low-level wind maximum. So not a low-level wind jet, not those typical characteristics, but definitely an area where you see increasing wind speeds up until about hub height, and then you see a sharp decrease in wind speed, so kind of a nose in the wind profile. And we looked into the range of the alpha values during this time frame. So the power law equation assumes it to be 0.11, so logarithmic, and or 0.14, the 1/7th rule. And we saw quite a range in terms of the distribution of alphas and high negative values, about 20% of the time, which would be indicative of that nose type profile offshore. So we didn't have any we have 1 day of temperature measurements. So now we could start to think about relating the wind profile changes to changes in stability. So that's what I'm showing here. This is our case study for August 30th. General met conditions, there was a high pressure off southeast of the Delmarva Peninsula. It was migrating south, and as it did, the skies cleared on this day. We had warming at the surface. This is sea surface temperature map showing the warming in the Chesapeake Bay. The red star is showing the wind energy area offshore. So if you'll notice that on this day, and this is a product from NOAA, from satellite and buoy measurements of sea surface temperature, but there's cooler water within that area where the wind energy area is, which is important when we think about changes to local stability in the marine boundary layer. And then just general surface map chart showed a shifting southeasterly flow to southwesterly. So now the radio sun data. We launched these balloons on the back of the boat. So I'm showing potential temperature here. The gray shading is the rotor layer, and the height is on the y-axis. So the launch times are in the different colors, so -4 for local time. So earlier in the day, pretty neutrally stable profile, but as the day progressed, stability began to increase, shown by the blue and the purple where the arrow is. The sharpest increase, though, in temperature, potential temperature, was seen above the rotor layer, but there is sort of an increase as well in the rotor layer. At the same time, the impact on wind speed is shown here. So wind speeds they sped up at the surface and throughout the rotor layer, and then we actually captured one of those instantaneous noses in the wind profile. And then in terms of wind direction, we saw a sharp shift in wind direction as the stability changed and the profile, the speed changed, a shift from northeasterly to southwesterly flow. So this was the evidence now that we see stability changing the wind profile offshore within the rotor layer of a turbine. And it raised more questions than it answered, which was what would be the best method then to estimate the wind profile offshore, given in this kind of condition, and how would you then incorporate the Met conditions into the expected power output? So a lot of work has looked into this, addressing stability, turbulence intensity, wind shear, and now directional wind shear's impact on power, and this is mainly using LIDAR or SODAR technology. There has been techniques proposed to incorporate these things in that wind speed estimate, known as equivalent wind speed. Essentially, you're accounting for the shear within the rotor layer. There's also been proposed a technique, the true flux equivalent wind speed, which accounts for wind shear and turbulence intensity throughout the rotor layer. And most recently, there's been discussion on working on equivalent wind, including the directional wind shear as well. So what's interesting, though, is that there's still no standard on the best way and the best practice for wind resource assessment in terms of IEC standards. There's a lot of best practices, but no standard. And from my understanding, the Power Curve Working Group with the European Wind Energy Association is working on this with other stakeholders, and equivalent wind speed is a topic that they're looking into to include, and the draft would be ready sometime in 2017. And this information is available on their website. So to conclude the case study, I wanted to look at the sensitivity to your expected power output. And so based on some of the techniques I just described. So I'm using an NREL 5-megawatt reference turbine, and I'm focusing on August 30th since I have some temperature data so I can make a claim about stability. So I'm showing wind power and time on the x-axis. And the LIDAR, just plain hub height measurement, is shown in blue. And then green is the equivalent wind speed. And then the red is the equivalent wind speed accounting for the turbulence change within the rotor layer. So just to generally point out what the wind LIDAR data is showing, the area in blue is where we saw on this day at the peak in the turbulence intensity. So it's hard to see in this graph, but if you compare the power output, you see that the red curve actually exceeds the LIDAR's estimate in power. So this is suggesting more power than if you were just to use a hub height wind speed value. My understanding is that the relationship between TI and power output is still not very clear. So this was an area of relative very low wind speed. So and it's just one case, so more statistics need to be done, but it's definitely interesting. We do know around 19 UTC, as I showed earlier, the stability increased and we saw some negative wind shear in the LIDAR data. And if you look at the difference between what the LIDAR, just using the hub height distribution of winds versus if you were to use these other techniques, is a large difference, about a factor of 2 in expected power output. Again, because the other techniques are incorporating the difference in the wind shear against the rotor layer. And so if you have weaker winds above the hub height, that will bring down your overall estimate too, from my understanding. So to conclude, I am a PhD student, so I'm formulating my project right now. As I mentioned, we have a home base for a scanning LIDAR is in Ocean City. It's scanning over water and adjacent land about 3 kilometers out, and this is just a snapshot of the radial velocity from that. So my idea was to construct a hypothetical wind farm offshore and do some sort of similar analyses as I've presented today, to show how met conditions vary spatially and how that would impact a hypothetical power output based on the technique that you use, and then show how it would impact your turbine's capacity factor, and then ultimately impact to the cost, the LCOE of the project, which capacity factor is a term of, and then how all that knowledge then could contribute to improved design of policies and inform standards. The issue, though, I'm dealing with now is that I have to be able to account for the wake effect in doing this, too. So there are a lot of questions still that remain, so I'd be happy to hear your feedback on this as well. So with that, I will conclude and take any questions. Thank you.
Is that on? Yeah. I don't really know much about the true flux equivalent wind speed. Do you know a bit more about that?
Yes, it's essentially the equivalent wind speed, except you're replacing the mean wind speed value at the hub height with a turbulence term as well. So there's another equation that you enter into that normal equivalent wind speed. I have the equation I can show you.
No, okay.
So it's basically accounting for the turbulence at the different heights.
Across the rotor or just at hub height?
At each height.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
I just have a small query. You showed the model skill and the one that had the largest bias, but seemed to have the least error in the wind direction. Is that right?
I think the...
The one that had the largest bias.
For...
So the one that has the maximum bias,
right,
seems to have the least bias in wind direction. Is that correct?
No, I think that they increase. We could go look at it. We'll see.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, no, for the, so if we look at the NNRP, the bias is 72 degrees for direction, the variance there. I may not be, I'm not a modeler, one of our colleagues is, so I can,
okay.
We could direct the question to him.
I had a question on the same graphics. Do you know what are the resolutions of these different models? You said that.
Yes, so they increase as you go from magenta to blue. So the NAM I know is 12 kilometers, the RAP is 13. And then I have a table at the as an extra slide. For the others, we're talking 100 kilometers to, I can actually show you the table. Let me do that.
You use model like with 12 kilometer of resolution, and model probably doesn't do any doesn't count for inland. But right. when your LiDAR is staying in the city and it's 3 kilometers, so it's kind of capturing a wind flow that influenced by inland.
Right.
That's why probably you have a huge biases when you try to compare a model with it just command.
Right, and how, if an internal boundary layer formed, how far it propagated offshore, right?